Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Today we are doing Batman, the video game. It's the only one that was ever made.
It's nice that Batman finally got a video game, and I just wish there were more of them.
It comes from a wonderful time of movie games, I think, because it doesn't have anything to do with the movie.
Like, it gets Batman right. Like, if it were really based on the movie, like, Batman would be, like, really clumsy, really slow. He'll fall through the roof, stand there, and then a bunch of dudes will, like, take turns punching at him, and Batman will just, like, catch their punches, and, like, while standing basically motionless except for his arms, like, in this game, he moves like you think Batman's gonna move.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower.
I think that's obvious.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. On this episode, we're going to be talking about a game called Klonoa, Door to Phantomile, or Phantomile. We'll get to that part. This game was nominated to us by Bebaka Blast on Apple Podcasts. And so it got shot up to the top spot we could give it. So that review was probably from 2 years ago. But hey,
thank you.
We did what we could. Thank you, Bebaka Blast. Klonoa was developed by Namco Limited and published by Namco Hontech in the United States and Sony in Japan for the PlayStation 1. Earliest release date and territory is December 11th, 1997 in Japan. Who's with me to talk about Klonoa, Door to Phantomile?
I'm Bobinator.
I'm Kurt.
And I'm Carl, and I gotta ask, do you just keep saying Klonoa because you like to say it, or because, like, it's a weird name?
It's a good name.
Klonoa.
Why wouldn't I say the name?
It doesn't roll off my tongue at all. I always call it, I don't even know what I call it anymore. Klonoa? No, I don't know. Sorry, I can't pronounce this name very well. I'm glad you pronounced it so much.
Do we know how Phantomile is pronounced?
That sounds about right.
That's how I would have pronounced it. It's like the word phantom and the word mile with an M missing, right?
I guess we'd have to look at it. How, like, do they spell it in, like, kana somewhere? Probably.
Looking up. It's
the title's different in Japan, though.
It's, so was it Kaze no Klonoa? Like, Klonoa of the Wind. It's like Kirby, how he's like Hoshi no Kirby, Kirby the Stars.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't know why that's a thing.
Though in this game, they also, when they did the remake, they just called it Klonoa. They did that 2000 and X remake thing where they just, like, get rid of the rest of the name. It's just the name of the protagonist.
Which is what they should have done. I don't know.
Klonoa is a platforming game for the PlayStation 1.
Yep. It's famously a 2.5D platformer, but it really isn't, because it does use the other dimension.
Yeah.
You know, the other 0.5 dimension.
Not hugely, though. Like, you still move along you move left and right along a 2D axis, but the world kind of shifts around.
Right. There's ways of, yeah.
This game does more with the concept of 3D than like any 2.5D platform in the last 10 or 15 years, I would say.
I think there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Rude guy comes in, just declaration. This isn't the Gomon games? One of them did 2.5D in a similar way to this, didn't it? Like lots of stuff moving in and out of the player space.
The N64 game did that.
Yeah. And that's what this one does a lot of. You do a lot of that. Pandemonium as well, right? Like Pandemonium,
I was going to mention that.
Yeah, that one feels like, you know, these all kind of came out roughly around the same period. Was just this, well, we can do 3D and we can do 2D, but 3D kind of looks like ass, so let's put 2D in the 3D and then we'll go home.
Somebody else, the elves will make the game.
Yes.
We don't have to do it. I just want to say, I think this is the only podcast in the history of podcastdom where one host would say, oh, that reminds me of Pandemonium. And then somebody else would say, I was just going to say that.
Pandemonium by Toys for Bobs, creator of Skylanders, the plastic trash that you will find in landfill for the rest of all time. Good.
And also Star Control.
Yeah, they've got the best resume ever. But they didn't do this game. This game was from the creator of Ninja Gaiden, if you are... want to know.
Yeah.
Wait, Ninja, the Tecmo guy?
No. The other guy. The original Ninja Gaiden.
Arcade game?
Definitely a NES game, I think.
Well, they were kind of like, weren't they sort of developed more or less concurrently?
Yeah.
I could see
so there is no original.
I'm pretty sure that I read that the Ninja Gaiden,
it
wasn't Itagaki, who is the one who famously left Tecmo because of like reasons that are unclear.
Game was directed by Hideo Yoshizawa, who conceptualized the setting as a dream world that could appeal to children and adults. This is directly from Wikipedia. That's why we make big bucks.
The dream world that appeals to kids and adults is probably a very different thing, so I don't really know how they were going to land that one. They basically did, though. It's nice.
It feels very... Would it be wrong to say it feels very Ghibli?
Oh, no, that's... It's very much... very much feels like that. I mean, it does. Like the character designs don't really look like it, but it has the same sort of, I don't know how to say it, like new agey and in touch with nature sort of feel.
It's very
to it.
Dreamlike, which is yeah. appropriate given the setting.
But it's not, when people think dreamlike, they also think like it's really trippy, and it's not.
It's not, no.
I get some little bit of Ghibli vibe, a little bit of a little Nemo, maybe.
I mean, it has that, there's some fantasy elements and there's some steampunky elements and there's some kind of fantasy elements. Like, it's all kind of just mixed in there. And that's the dreamlike sort of setting is nothing really makes too much sense if you try and work out any particular part. Like, everyone seems to live in this very small world that's just, like, here is the kingdom of trees and kingdom of water and kingdom of the rest of it. Wind? I don't know. Yeah, like,
it's... I think we could call it like a platformer ecosystem.
Yes, right? Exactly. Perfect.
It hits all the notes. yeah, so like the character, I mean, to me, I didn't think Ghibli or really anything at all. Maybe with the little monster characters who really just look like nothing so much as shy guys. And
they look like the Knights into the Dreams, like the Nightmarian kind of like... They're like circusy nightmare characters. That's what they're supposed to be.
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But Klonoa... The hero is like some sort of like 1930s cartoon non-animal, right?
I think he's supposed to be a cat with big ears.
Yeah, rabbity cat.
I believe in the manual they canonically declare him to be a cat with big ears. And as far as I can tell, nobody believes them.
Is that like an in-universe thing? That's what Klonoa says he is?
Yeah, well, like, I think it's like it's treated as close enough to canon because I think it's in the manual or it's what the it says it in the Japanese manual or something. Like, I think he is declared as a cat of some kind.
With flappy ears.
Yeah, with big ears that he can control, like, pensive tails kind of thing.
Yeah, which is so the way the game works, like, the basic platformer stuff is they really do not stretch themselves too much. I think they were focused on making a game that would work like, oh, let's make Xerxes just want to throw up because it's so disorienting.
I just want to say... If it weren't for 3D element, I think this you could basically do the basic gameplay as a Super Nintendo game, and I kind of see the appeal in that.
That's what the Game Boy Advance games were, basically.
Right?
Yeah, so it's kind of like you can, your character can, kind of flap his ears, I guess. Is that what's happening?
It's kind of like the Yoshi's Island, the like flutter. Jump.
Yeah. Could do that. Can shoot a bling wad.
oh, yeah, there's a little buddy friend that calls Hupo.
Hupo is, yeah, exists as apparently a major character, but only kind of shows up more as the game goes on, even though he just hangs out with Klonoa or something. It's called the Wind Ring, by the way.
Yeah.
Blingwad. Yeah. So it just goes out a little ways and it will grab an enemy and Klonoa can hold it and then can throw it or can use it as like an extra boost for the jump or I think that's maybe it. Or in some of the enemies like do the standard thing where they can fly so you can hold on to it and you'll go up a little bit. And there's probably a few other things like that I'm forgetting. But that's basically what you do.
And basically I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, you'd think they'd do more of it, but they really don't. You basically can grab enemies, and the handful of enemies that can hover, you hover with them. And the rest, you just hold them. They don't do anything else.
There's kind of like a vague puzzle platformer element to it, because you can throw enemies, like, into the scenery, or out to the scenery and into the screen.
Right.
And sometimes there's things that you need to hit, like switches, or during a boss battle, there's something you need to hit like that.
You usually have to throw them at bosses, either into the screen or below you. It's pretty much every boss has some sort of throwing aspect in it.
Which is cool. I'm glad that they did that, because it feels like kind of a sort of undercooked element to the game, but I still like that they acknowledge, they really are trying to acknowledge that there is, like, space.
They really feel more like treasure bosses. Like they start to feel like pretty cool stuff when they actually go all out with some of the technical flair in the game.
Yeah, we should get to that in a second. But
I want to say though that they basically make the game work around this entire concept, and that is a very kind of 16-bit kind of thing to have this one idea and just keep iterating on it as you go.
I mean, that's platformers. That's how they're made. It is a platform, but it's like, it feels so different, at least at first, because of the way the 2.5D world works, where it's like a lot of stages will be built around like it's kind of like going up a tower on the outside, like a tube or something.
Yeah, it does like,
and you're like kind of wrapping around it. Yeah.
It's got some cool stuff, and you got paths that loop past each other, so you'll see bits of the level that you saw before, but from a different direction.
Or you can see like stuff in the background. You're like, oh, if I can get there, I can get that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it'll like give you hints about like, you know, if you go down, like there are branching paths, not necessarily branching paths, but there's like some extremely elaborate, even in I think the first stages, there's some really elaborate kind of sidetracks you can get off on. Well, and you get to the end of it, and it's just like, there's nothing else to do. You just got to go back down.
Yeah, you got to collect your...
There's a lot of... kidnapped guys, right? It's sort of like Yoshi's Island in that way.
It's not
really actually collecting all the people actually do anything?
I believe it lets you access the...
They show up on the map screen, you know? They're the guys that play the orchestra for, like, the song.
Yeah, and, I really like that
at least
bit.
For the Wii... Yeah. At least for the Wii version, I don't know if it's in the PS1 version, if you collect all of them, then you unlock a mirror mode. So you play all the levels just flipped.
That's only in the Wii version. They introduced that one, I think, to address one of the main complaints against this game, which is it's pretty short, and it's not too difficult, except when it's really difficult. I think in this one you might unlock that bonus stage. I don't know if you get that just for beating the game or if you have to collect everything. Because it's not too hard to collect everything if you're kind of obsessive about it. You know, if you're like, oh, there's two ways to go. Oh, I gotta go both ways. You know, you gotta try and check them both out.
The only thing is, it's like the levels are, there's not very many of them. I think
that's
there's
right.
What, like six like worlds?
Yeah, six worlds. Boss level.
And they're kind of long, though. So, like, if you miss one, it's like, well, I have to spend another 15, 20 minutes to replay it. But if you map it out, it's like you could beat the game in 2 hours or so. And it's not difficult at all.
I like that because, yeah, I've read the, there's kind of like a gamut of like critical reviews about this one in terms of like, if it's meant to be for kids, why is the last few levels like kind of get brutally difficult towards the end?
Yeah, this game has kind of a big difficulty spike out of nowhere.
It's not so much out of nowhere, it's the last stage or two where it's just like, and now use the techniques that you probably didn't bother to learn through the whole game.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool the problem I have with the way it laid out is you don't actually get any more abilities really through the game. The it introduces new stuff that you kind of have to deal with. You know, like, there's a few different enemies and there's a few different ways that the puzzles, like, operate under, but you don't get, like, a longer ring shot, you don't get, like, more air time, you don't get anything like that. You're the same, like, Klonoa the whole time through, so...
It kind of feels like it's, you know, how Kirby has the, you know, the enemy copy abilities. Like, it feels like it should have something like that.
That's because the gameplay is very Kirby-esque. It's like Kirby's Dream Land 1, right? It's like the original Kirby, where you can, like, pick up enemies and shoot them back out. It just doesn't have, like, the floating... It has the flutter jump from Yoshi's Island instead of being able to, like,
they
cut yourself had up.
So that different enemies do different things to grab them. Like, some of them have propellers you can use in the glide. There should have been more things like that to mix things up a little bit, I guess.
Right. I
really thought that it was... you mentioned the flutter jump. It's actually one of my biggest complaints about the game is I hate that the jump is not a stamina timer where you can just keep reactivating it until you run out of the duration. Because there was, like, so many times where I accidentally double-tapped the hover button, because you jump and you hold it.
Cancel out.
Yeah. So you jump, you hold the button, and he'll engage his flutter. But if you're trying to do, like, a grapple, grab, jump, throw thing, where you kind of, like, grab, jump, glide, jump, grab... There's a few bits where you have to, like, chain off enemies to do things. If you fumble that, then you just plummet like a brick, because you lose your flutter if you, you know, can't re-engage it.
That happened to me too. did anybody else? So it sounds like I might be the only person who found playing this game a little bit disorienting, like the way that the camera will move around and stuff to like change angles and things like that. Like when you go higher up in certain areas, like the camera kind of dips down and you're actually missing part of your sprite's feet, things like that. Like weird little tricks they can only do because, you know, the way it was made.
When I first played the game, like when it came out, it was a little much, but, you know, since then I've just kind of gotten used to it.
I think this one is one of the more restrained of the 2.5D platformers. Like, it's the camera is mostly, like, fairly... It doesn't do huge wraparounds and stuff and really, like, spin and try and trick you or fake you into different things. Like, it's doing its best to kind of help you get through the game. I was going to say, you know, I literally mentioned Pandemonium and stuff. I've played several... 2.5D games that kind of are less considerate. So this one, I'm like, oh, wow, I can see my character like the whole time. This is great.
Yeah, I mean, it could be worse, but that's not, I'm just saying, like, it's not like I would say that it's bad. Like, I think it's something that most people would get used to, but it is kind of weird. I think part of it also is when you play on the PlayStation version, you've got all the weird, like, warping of the textures and stuff happening too.
But one thing for me is that I do admit on some of the later levels, it can be a little bit hard to mentally map. You have, like, paths crisscrossing over each other. Sometimes I get a little bit lost when that happens.
It's almost like, yeah.
I'd say those are mostly trying to fake you out, except for, like, the very last area. Because most of them do actually just kind of loop fairly logically, and even the very last area, it actually kind of spits you in and out at the doors that you're meant to go through for the most part. I was surprised that, there is a lot of intelligent design going on in this game. It's quite thoughtful about how it's laid out for the most part. And the only thing that even like some of the secret rescue spots, you can usually miss them, but go back if you kind of realize you've missed it. There's only a few bits where it's got the like the tubes where you auto move through. Once you get on those, you're on those until the end of it. You can't escape from those. But for the most part, it's pretty generous, I thought. Even though it has a life system, because it's 1996, so it's got a life system, and yeah,
but you can save, and yeah, it's like, I was kind of impressed they threw you into the mine part stage in stage two, yeah, so, but it doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can just stand still in that mine cart and you'll be fine.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, hey, look what we can do.
Ah, the mine cart, and then nothing happens. It's great.
Yeah, I was like, oh, get ready for this. And then, like, you know, I'm thinking, like, oh, this is going to do some Crash Bandicoot type thing where it's going to move towards me. No, and I'll really be in trouble.
No.
It doesn't do that because it's not stupid.
God, I don't think you played Dark Savior, but that has a minecart segment that makes me basically want to destroy every electrical device I own. Like, just to escape from the minecart segment, it is an abomination of a thing. Actually, that is also 2.5D, and that was much harder to get through. So that's why, like, this game, amongst the 2.5D games, I'm like, oh, wow, I can almost make sense of it. Oh.
Yeah, there are some other problems, like, with the, like, I think these are a little bit more minor. Like, until you get used to like kind of figuring out the stages, it's kind of confusing at times knowing like which chasms are actual like kill you chasms.
It does and, that. Yeah.
Yeah. It does usually do the Mario thing where they put some diamonds in this case instead of coins out where, you know, in areas where you should be jumping and yes. to kind of help you kind of communicate to you subconsciously that it's okay to do this, but not all the time.
And it is a little diamonds. Cause there's one thing that's really strange to me. Like the hardest part of this game was, you know how you get the like the diamond multiplier? Like it's a weird little fairy that you like.
Yeah. Play.
And I'm like, that's the hardest part of the whole game is freeing that fairy and collecting the diamonds before it runs out. Because that fairy hangs around for like 4 seconds and all the diamonds you need to collect are like 4.5 seconds away. I'm like, what the hell? Why is this specific thing so hard?
And the benefit you get for doing that is not.
Yeah, it's not. The game does throw plenty of extra lives at you. You get like 2 to 4 every stage if you're kind of paying attention and managing to jump at specific times where they're, you know, they're hanging out.
How many collectible items are there in each stage? There's the other little.
There's like 6 of the guys you got to rescue.
You got to rescue. And then there's the diamonds.
Yes, which just give you extra lives. The game doesn't even keep track of your points.
They're coins. Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah, which is.
I really appreciate that.
The extra life coins, if you want to count those, but those are usually at the end of diamonds and stuff. So,
all right. So that's good. It doesn't go crazy with that stuff.
No, and it doesn't lock the ending off either. You don't have to rescue all the guys to get the ending.
Speaking of which, we should bring up the ending at some point. It's kind of special.
Oh, God, game.
Let's do it now.
Oh, God, okay. Don't finish this game.
Yeah. Who wants to discuss the ending?
I think the honors are yours.
I don't. Oh God, I don't want to spoil the whole ending for people because it freaking comes out of nowhere.
Maybe we should leave it to him. I don't know.
We could compare it to another game that has a similar ending.
Why are we doing this?
Okay, just to say, I played this through last year with my daughter, and it made her bawl. Just like a control lady.
Oh God, I can't imagine what that must have been like.
Because this is a kid's game, and it's the ending is brutal, and they make it worse in the Wii version. It's slightly uplifting in this the PlayStation version. In the Wii version, it's basically like this isn't the ending, but it's basically like Kelowna is dead forever. Like that's kind of like not emotionally out of line with the ending. It's
why can't we just say what it is? No, like if you're.
Because it's so brutal, I want people to play it.
Well, I mean, Klonoa, it's not bad. Like, Klonoa doesn't die. Like, there's a Klonoa 2, there's a whole franchise, but it definitely, like...
It actually ignores the ending, for the most part. That's how bad the ending is.
It's like a Monkey Island 2 sort of thing. It's like, yeah. Well, I mean, you could also, you know, write it off as, you know, it is a dream world, so...
Yes. Like, I mean, it's just like, it's like a really weird tearjerker ending, like, after a fairly, like, friendly game, except for the other part, which I loved so much, when you're rushing back to save Grandpa, and, anyway!
It doesn't make it.
You gotta avenge Grandpa, wow, this game, for no reason at all, is just suddenly like, bam, take that, Klonoa, you get beaten up, I don't know why this game did that, but it's...
Everybody remembers it. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. It works.
I find the context of Hoopy also kind of creepy, but it makes more sense when the ending's considered, because it does kind of pull like a... It's not quite it was all a dream, but, you know, it's kind of... It's a bit out there.
Is it like a Link's Awakening-esque, I believe?
Link's Awakening, it's... A little bit more of a, I want to say a little bit more of a down note than Link's Awakening.
Okay,
but
think of it like the opposite of Link's Awakening.
That's actually exactly what it is. That's a good call, Bob. I really like Link's Awakening. The remake came out. I didn't play it yet, but I really like Link's Awakening. This one, I found it, story, they wanted the story to be like that, by the way. That was intentional. They wanted to inject more story into a typical platformer. It doesn't have like tons, but what's there, I think it's nice.
There are lots of regular breaks for to have people just like bad guys. I'm gonna do some mischief, and I was like,
you mentioned the bad guy. I love Gaudius. He's so good. I love his voice. It's just like this, like overdriven, like over compressed, like bassy sound. It's like,
oh yeah, this game has like a fictional language.
Yeah. The
for
whole
all
thing,
the characters.
Everyone talks in fictional language, but they use proper nouns sometimes. So It'd be like, yeah, Klonoa.
The Wii version, they actually have an option that you could play it in, like, real spoken dialogue.
I don't recommend that. It does not sound very good.
I didn't think it was that. Like, again, I played it with my daughter, and you know, that's much easier than having to have me talk over their little gibberish language.
So, okay.
The music in this game, too, by the way.
It is pretty really, good, yeah.
Is it the same in the Wii, or did they change the Wii music?
No, the music is exactly the same.
Oh, that's excellent, because I couldn't imagine this game with a different soundtrack. It's
it's very, very, very good.
It's each one is distinctive. It's not chiptunes. It's, like, mostly samples, I think, and they really push it. Some of the tracks, even the final area, which I thought would be a really menacing track, is actually more of, like, a Dreamworld kind of, like, lighter... like smooth track that gets a bit menacing. I really think that they very smart musical choices in this. It's cool game. I also like the it uses pre-rendered graphics for the characters and stuff in the PlayStation version. And where that gets interesting is in the cutscenes and stuff. They use different camera angles, and they do obviously have to pre-render different directions of the characters in the cutscenes, which
is and it looks pretty smooth. Like it does look pretty good. Like, you don't really think about them being, they don't feel like sprites.
No, and I was really liked it because it's a really distinctive style to have the camera kind of panning and cutting to different directions, and then having the character actually rendered in a pre-rendered graphics from that direction, which is kind of like, you know, even something like a lot of other pre-rendered games would just be like, oh, no, do not touch the camera. Yeah. We do not move the camera, because then we have to re-render all the characters in a new direction. Whereas this game was happy to render out some of the characters.
Right, they went the extra mile, yeah.
And that's the whole game. It's the extra mile.
Yeah, so...
extra Phantoma.
Yeah, so we got it. We got to rank this really soon. A couple very quick facts that I found interesting is that, for one, the Klonoa series, you wouldn't think it'd have a beach volleyball spinoff, but it does.
They really tried to push him as a mascot character, and I don't think he took off in America, but either he was more popular in Japan or Namco just kept on trying.
He's like Pac-Man, too, because they put Pac-Man on his hat. They really wanted him to be...
too bad, because...
I like him a lot. He's really sweet.
They were going to have a movie. They only canceled it, like, this year.
It's pretty recent.
That was so funny, the movie. But they announced it, like, 2015 or 2016. Like, the movie was really recent, way outside of when they probably should have made it.
And I think Klonoa also makes an appearance in Namco Cross Capcom, that's
PS2, that's right, the MMO thing.
Crazy RPG thing.
Yeah, that is the crossover. There was a action RPG that was only released in Japan.
We're trying to make Klonoa happen. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they tried with the Wii game, because they did the remake of it on the Wii, and I guess it never took off.
Did you all get to see the questionnaire they did where they were going to redesign Klonoa for American audiences?
Yeah,
did you get to see that? They were like, hey, Americans, Klonoa too cute for you? Here's edgy Klonoa. And apparently even you all Americans have a limit, and you were like, this is terrible, don't do this. So they did not. They abandoned edgy American Klonoa. So you get the basic guy still.
I mean, edgy American Klonoa he kind of looks like, what's that game? Dak and Jaxter?
Jack and Daxter.
Yeah, he has the spiky hair.
Yeah.
It's like Jack and Daxter kind of blended together as the same character.
Jaxter.
Yes. His name, right?
Yeah. Jaxter. So,
sounds like it.
So, his name also sounds like something else, which is Bob brought to our attention what I think is a delightful advertisement from the 90s.
Okay, you got to mention the ad, please.
So the advertisement, just to describe it, it was a huge double page spread.
Two-page magazine spread.
It's a black and white photo of a young man and young woman in like about ready to kiss on the beach, and the man has a little not speech balloon, but he says, "But Susan, I have Klonoa." And Susan, I guess, says, "Hey, baby, I want Klonoa," which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But they are playing up the hey, it sounds kind of like chlamydia. Like, you know, this is like some ad agency where they're sitting around spitballing ideas around like the table. They're like, "They how's it pronounced? Klonoa sounds like chlamydia."
Well, it's like, you know, well, it was a PlayStation game, and I feel
the era. It has to have edgy, like...
Yeah, like, the kids' games mostly went on the Nintendo 64, I feel. Like, they were still, like, I don't know, even Gex and things like that were...
Gex, you know, more it's
adolescent versus like little cutesy. Like they were always a little bit edgy, where Klonoa was achingly sincere.
I really like that so much. The dialogue is so friendly in this game. Everyone's so nice. I really like it.
Except for the people who kill Grandpa.
Well, hey, oh God, Grandpa, not again. Also, it's that is such a brutal cutscene. It's just like, oh, thank God, Grandpa's okay, and he waves at them. Hi, kiddo. They get Independence Day'd.
Yeah.
Freaking giant spaceship fires a goddamn.
I'm so glad we spent 3 minutes agonizing over whether to spoil this or not.
Kurt did it.
Well, it was.
He went out there.
It's like a level 3.
That's also not the one that we're talking about. There's a whole other gut punch at the
end. That's true. That's true. Okay. Before we rank.
Here's what I was thinking for ranking. Okay. Is this better or worse than Yoshi's Island? I'd start there.
Well, I don't think that's fair. Because
yeah, I mean, I'd say it's worse, but there are things that, like, I really. Because I know it's one of those games that, like, when I played it when it first came out, it was, like, fun, but it's kind of disposable. Like, you know, 2 hours and you beat it. And then as the years went on, it was just something that I had really pleasant memories about. Like, there's a real sense of place in the levels that make them just really fun to exist in.
Well, it's also, like, for people who like platformers, I think one of the problems the game had is that it was released before people were nostalgic about platformers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they just didn't wait long enough. They just kind of winced. If they waited until, like, they put this out on the PS3, it might have been a huge, huge hit. I also think that, like...
Well, they tried it again on the PS2, by the way. They kept...
Yeah, there's a sequel that was...
PS2 sequel.
Yes,
that was a near-launch title. It was pretty good. I don't remember it fondly in the same way, but there's nothing wrong with
it. Yeah, I mean, but what I'm saying is, like, you gotta... If they waited until, like, the nostalgia built up, kind of like how, like, you know... You could make a game like Ukulele and now, and like people are like, I want those like 3D, you know, platformer collectathons. That's what I want.
I can't even remember what the name of it is, but I've seen a 2.5D platformer fairly recently. I think it might have been on Kickstarter or something. And it, you know, it's got this kind of style of game. And I think that, yeah, people are hankering for more 2.5D style games now.
I mean, there's plenty of 2.5D games. It's just that none of them really do the thing with the camera like this game does anymore.
If they don't do the camera like this, then as far as I'm concerned, they're a 2D game with 3D graphics. That's
I agree. They do it more as a cost thing because it's just cheaper to do like render things in 3D than it is to create all these 2D
graphics. It is, yeah. I mean, so the other thing is like what's interesting is this is a unlike. If they had waited later, though, what would happen is the people who made the game, for the most part, would not be people who remembered how to make classic, like, 2D games.
Yeah, that's like...
This is also the reason that I wanted to play it, because, like, I hated, like, almost every 3D platformer I hated back then. And Klonoa I gave a shot, because it was the sort of game that I actually liked.
Yeah, so...
I don't think there are many people that were like me, but...
Actually, you'd be surprised. I had a check about... critically, this game was very well-received, and that's contemporary reviews. You kind of... You're seeing 8s and 9s for this one. For a couple of the reviewers kind of gave it a little bit lower, citing, you know, difficulty or duration of the game, because it's not very long. But most of the reviewers really liked it, I guess, because they were also hankering for this kind of game. But at the same time...
I refuse to believe that. Those are people who did nothing but play this type of game for, like, just a few years earlier. That was, like, most of what they had to do. I don't think they were... I think they were won over by it. That's what I think.
I think, yeah, like, one of the surprising things about this one is when you actually play it, how much it plays like a 16-bit platformer, because it doesn't look like one, obviously. And it doesn't have those kind of, like, weird hitbox issues or anything that I think some of the... Especially the 3D-based 2.5D games. This one...
Yeah.
Yeah, as Bob said, you could put it on a 2D plane, and it would at least probably feel roughly the same in terms of the physical act of playing it, and it probably would.
Yeah. I'd say it's a pretty good platformer, but because of when it was released, is it the best, like, 2D-ish platformer of the 32-bit era?
It's close to it.
Because there just
better
wasn't...
Better than Pandemonium, for sure.
Yeah.
The only game like I really compare this one to is why is Tomba, or Tombi as they call it here. Because that one took it the genre in like an RPG-ish kind of thing, like a longer form game, whereas this one is kind of cripplingly short.
It's also just a much more traditional platformer.
Yeah, like it's you don't get excited. I'd known about this game for literally decades. And I was like, why would I play that? Like I've never pushed myself to play it. I finally played it, and I finished it now, because it was highly enjoyable. And if any of you haven't played it, you'd probably be surprised how much you'll enjoy it, because it's a really pleasant game where all the pieces do genuinely fit together, which is, that's probably the most impressive thing about it, is it's just like, oh, they didn't drop the ball anywhere. It doesn't lean too heavily on a gimmick or anything. Also, they deliberately kept it simple. This game apparently was a 3-button game, and they went, no, we can get it down to 2 buttons. And yeah. So it's a 2-button game.
I really, really appreciate that too. So with that in mind, there are other, 2D games being made at the time, but they weren't a lot of them, and most of them were not that good. So that is something to consider. It's also sort of still a kind of underappreciated, underplayed game, which I think you can't really say about Yoshi's Island, because Yoshi's Island's been re-released several times now. So it's like, it's highly available. Whereas,
this one, I think they did manage to, well, they did the remake, which apparently is by all accounts pretty good. And you can, I think, still buy the original on the PlayStation Store, because Namco clearly have a fondness for this character, this game, because...
Why do you think, aside from the cuteness, I don't think that's what did it in here. I think that there's just something about the character that is oddly generic, despite being like a really cool design, I think. It just doesn't look different enough from other cat little people.
Yeah, the game seems fairly generic, which is why when the story is kind of gets a bit brutal, but also it just is more interesting than nothing, I'm like, oh, wow, this is actually like, I can see why people are charmed by this game. You can see it when you play it, and it's like, oh, cool.
I think you got to spend time with it, though. Yeah. I don't think there's anything about the character design that's like, say...
You know, the character was originally going to be a robot? It's funny. Like it's terrible. Oh, it's so bad.
It looked very, very... I think that would have been what they did if it were totally 3D. In terms of, like, they used polygons instead of sprites. Yeah.
To move things back on track, is it better or worse than Freedom Planet, do you think? That's at number 130.
I think it's better than Freedom Planet, just because I like the world better.
All right. So we got something between 126 and 130. We can work with that.
I don't think Xerxes was saying it should go below Yoshi's Island. I don't think
Yoshi's Island, though, is sort of kind of low, like famously, infamously.
Yeah, I've always wanted to wish I was on that one.
It's not that great. I'm going to invoke the ghost of Jeff.
Yeah, it's... I think his point was that it's has more interesting stuff in it, but it's just not the most... I don't know.
I think that game. Like, it's... Again, I guess it's similar because it has a very charming, unique style, has a cool world, but... The game itself is just going like, I go around and do stuff.
I mean, it's at 126. And that's probably still where I would put it. I don't, maybe it's not under, I was kind
I'm
of
hesitant to put it above Sonic CD 118.
I would put it above Sonic CD.
You would.
Sonic CD is like a game. You're like, yeah, it's not the greatest Sonic game, but it's a Sonic game. Therefore,
Sonic CD is a disaster that I think is great.
Like, as we're I'm in the process of editing that episode now, like while we're recording this. And yeah, I'm just like, oh my, this episode is like 55 minutes long. And it's about a game that none of them seems to really like all that much. But because it's Sonic, it somehow warrants like this huge, like, symposium.
Well, we gotta do something to counteract all the Nintendo bias around here. Just saying.
This is a PlayStation game, so it's not a Nintendo game.
Look, I want to put it up higher anyway, because nobody needs to pimp out Sonic. Like, everybody's playing those games still and talking about them and drawing pictures of them and writing fanfic of them and creating original characters of them. It's never going away.
Klonoa feels like some kid's original character, by the way. Like, it does look totally like a Sonic original character. a cat with big ears. Yeah, it's got a hat with Pac-Man, because I like Pac-Man. Yeah.
You'd have to like give him like a bullet sash and like
well, he's got a big
to
belt.
Be a true original. Yeah, he needs some like
more belts. Oh,
also, he's a vampire and he has a gun.
He can fly.
He can fly.
If we're going that high, can I at least ask you put above Super Meat Boy at 100?
No. Because Super Meat Boy is like doing something that was actually pretty influential. It wasn't the first like game of its kind, of course, but it was the most popular game of its kind, and maybe still is. So I would say I'm okay with putting it below Sonic CD, just because Sonic CD is up way too high, and I don't think it's like I can really take it into account. But I would put it around like the Echo the Dolphin territory, where I think that it's like it doesn't really do anything incredibly innovative except for the presentation. But at the same time, like, it's just, it's a kind of game that I think a lot of people would like and not a lot of people play. And I don't know.
It's also, it doesn't waste your time. I love games that don't waste your time.
And like Freedom Planet is just a Sonic game. It's
Freedom Planet also has even more. I think did they end up cutting out the like absolute whiplash of like
No, not that one thing you're thinking of.
Oh, it's still in there. Great. No, it can go above Freedom Planet because that's
all right. All right, more, I can fight that.
Okay, let's put it below Demon's Souls and above Freedom Planet. How about
you? Don't want to put above Yoshi's Island? Is that the final?
I'm okay with this. I'm okay. All right. Yoshi's Island, I think, does deserve kudos for all the interesting stuff it tried, whereas this didn't really try anything interesting. It just tried to be a good basic game.
I think if this game had about 3 or 4 more challenging levels, because there's one level after you finish the game, you get everything done, you get a level where it pushes it, where you do like quadruple jumps and you sweep across and you do all this, like, because we did mention you underutilize the abilities that Klonoa has through the game. If it did a little bit more of that, it would be an absolute all-time ultra classic. Instead of being 130, which is still like freaking insanely high,
really high, and it's just mostly as a recommendation. You should check it out. It's worth your time. You might very well like it. That's where it goes. Klonoa, everybody, you have it. It's yours. Give it a shot.
See your doctor about it.
See your doctor. Talk to your doctor about Klonoa.
Klonoa is right for you.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GCNRNX and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.